Welcome to Michael's Green World, your window to competitive sustainability. Join your host, Michael Herzog, as we explore innovative solutions and gain new insights into sustainable living. Featuring experts, practitioners, and pioneers from the field, every episode offers a fresh perspective on the strategies that are shaping a more sustainable future. Hi, I'm Michael, your host. Today, I'll share my personal journey, illustrating why I maintain a never-give-up attitude amidst dire forecasts about our world's state of health and future. We'll start from my pioneering ancestors, through my days as an engineer, to my development in corporate roles, and how I found my direction in coaching sustainability and digitalization. It all began 100 years ago when my grandfather, armed with an unshakable pioneer spirit and boxes with Swiss wallpapers, embarked on a voyage across the seas to the Far East. The mission from his employer was to enter the Asian wallpaper market and start this venture in Japan. Imagine, this was a time when trips to Japan took weeks and you waited months for international payments to complete. After settling in, he soon understood that nobody in Japan knew about wallpapers, how to use them, or had a desire to replace the colored walls that they already had. Despite this initial setback, he reoriented his goals, resolved the wallpaper business, and founded a trading company that then successfully contributed to international exchange. As a trader, his resilience was tested through earthquakes, fires, and even World War II, losing everything twice, yet always restarting with renewed vigor. I guess that this spirit of resilience is something also woven into my DNA. And therefore, the W in my middle name, which I share with my grandfather and my father, symbolizes the peaks and valleys of a mountain range, the highs and lows of life. I've integrated this symbol into my company name now, MWH Consulting, to embody resilience and continual progress. My father was born in Japan before World War II, and also he displayed incredible bravery. Once a hand grenade flew through a window where he was, he quickly threw it back out, saving lives. His experiences around the war and the subsequent return to Switzerland, where he completed his degree in chemical engineering, this all to me highlighted the mostly unsustainable nature of human conflict. When people ask me, "Where are you from?" I say, "From Switzerland and from Japan." This often leaves a question mark in their faces. So I say, "My father fell in love with my mother in Germany and married her there. They moved to Korea, where I was then born, and when I was still a baby, we moved to Japan. In the German kindergarten in Japan near Kobe, I was more interested in drilling holes in the sand with an electric motor with a little gear attached and a torch lamp battery than in playing catch-me-if-you-can games with the kids. At school there, I enhanced and resold rubber band driven toy planes to my classmates. Like my grandfather, I liked the idea of doing business. I guess these were early signs of my entrepreneurial spirit. In the 1970s, our family then moved back to Switzerland. My father continued to work there. When I look back at the technology that was prevalent in those days, this recent story comes to my mind. A teen stumbles upon a rotary phone in their family attic. Imagine the surprise when Dad reveals it's actually a phone. There's no touch screen, no display, just a circular dial with numbers and a handset on top. No buttons to press, no screens to swipe, just a classic way to communicate, totally unknown to the kid. Technology sure jumps ahead now and then, doesn't it? Have you ever noticed this yourself? Looking back, changes seem quicker and just part of the flow. Very natural. But thinking innovation ahead, that can feel like a whole different story, much more difficult. After school, I began my electrical engineering studies. Actually, something I wanted to do to create new things since I was 14 years old. I followed my father's footsteps to the same Polytechnic University in Zurich that he had graduated from. This studying was a challenge at times. While my innovative approach sometimes earned me high scores, it also brought word of caution from a professor to be less blue sky minded. On another memorable moment, I arrived late to an important final exam due to a snow-delayed train, ran through the cold air trying to catch up, and my nose started to bleed. Yet somehow, the adrenaline helped me focus, and I scored the highest of my finals. It was incredible. And I guess this strengthened my never give up attitude. Before I even had my diploma from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in hand, I was fortunate to find a young high-tech company in Switzerland that could actually leverage my blend of technical and cultural background and capabilities. They hired me quickly. I need to say here that I kept my Japanese in good shape by finding friends in Switzerland from Japan so that I could continue to chat and keep the language alive. So when I had joined this high-tech engineering company with a small team of engineers, we had a collaboration with the Japanese company and a cross-license agreement. We improved their technology enough to manufacture high-quality products. And definitely my regular trips to Japan benefited from my language. However, just before we wanted to start production, we faced a significant challenge when a whole test lot failed a high-temperature test just before production was due to begin. It seemed like a disaster, bringing our progress to a screeching halt. Yet, this crisis demonstrated once again that even seemingly hopeless situations could be resolved under intense time pressure as we quickly developed a better assembly process and moved ahead with production. Subsequently, I was given the opportunity to move to the United States and lead the rollout and marketing of that product line. Living in the suburbs of Indianapolis for a few years and traveling across the United States to promote the product I had developed to the factory representatives was a great experience that taught me many lessons on how to achieve goals with a great team and how to communicate to reach objectives. After about 2 years in that role, I got a call from my former Swiss boss who wanted me back to address a strategic issue. And management there felt I was the right guy to lead several teams to find solutions with customers and about technology. What was my task? To help our research and development team to improve a design and prepare the market and the salespeople for this next innovation. This role put me in touch with customers, maintenance managers, service managers, researchers, developers, and marketing teams. In global service and product management, then, I learned a lot about convincing people to change viewpoints, and sometimes I felt to be a catalyst for change. In German we say, das Bessere ist der Feind des Guten, that literally translated would be, the better solution is the enemy of the good one. It was a fascinating role. I better understood how people react to the need to change and how to explain, convince, and then smoothen such journeys. You see, I moved around a lot in the same group of companies, having a lot of different jobs. At that time then, I moved on, became a service manager for a different division. And eventually I stepped up as a corporate service director, and I was tasked with building a robust service business. An interesting exercise in economical sustainability by diversifying the business by adding services. This new service business added a lot of customer experience and got us to better understand what customers really need. I've always loved this role because it got me to have the most honest and business-oriented discussions both internally and externally with customers. For service, it is crucial to know the history of the equipment that you have sold many years ago. Digitalization was key. I worked closely with informatics to ensure that our equipment's history, sales data, shipment details, and service records was securely logged in one corporate database, which we then called the Common Equipment Record. We were very proud about this, but there were also people who said that it wouldn't really work because they had all the paper in the document library and they would store it, and that was much more safe and better than having everything in the computer system. Back then, around the year 2000, only a few companies had such detailed electronic records of their installed base. It laid a foundation for understanding the life cycle of our equipment and added a great deal of long-term efficiency. The people that thought that their document libraries would be kept forever found out that the new system was very useful. For my later role in sustainability management, this episode added a lot of insights about the product life cycle and how to manage data. We jump forward a bit, and getting closer to retirement age 65, I was very lucky in my 60s to be able to hand over my duties as a quality director early enough to still get involved into a new challenge and become a part of a sustainability management team. But before we get to that, I need to tell you what I did together with my family at our home in those days. Remember, my education was electrical and electronic engineer. And I discovered that the regulations in Switzerland were evolving to speed up investments into sustainable energy production. Not only can we save taxes here by improving our houses, we can also provide electricity to our neighbors, even if they live in a separate house nearby. I realized I could actively participate in transforming our electrical system. Also, I could make the heat pump that I had installed 7 years earlier more efficient by thermally insulating my roof. Therefore, in a 2-year project, I improved our old house that has walls dating back to 1850. And by producing electricity and sharing the benefits with my neighbor, and getting an all-electric car and feeding the surplus energy into the grid, I started to contribute to grid stability, and by switching car fuel to electricity from our roof, reduced my carbon footprint. It's a great place to live, and you can look at it on an aerial video of the nature preserve that is just nearby, and you can there also see our home on my website https://mwh-consulting.ch. In the planning phase of this house improvement project, I read a lot and watched YouTube videos about heating energy optimization and solar electricity that I had not studied before. I decided to select carpenters that are living nearby and technology to optimize my carbon footprint further. So I decided on a large energy management system with a pretty hefty battery and got that all from a German manufacturer. This project, you know, it costs a lot of money, made me feel like paying my heating and electricity bills long before they arrived. So if you go for this too, you should consider it as a generational project. It's not a short-term thing. For sure, there are also immediate benefits such as increased value of your home, if you may ever want to sell it. I guess there are big cultural differences in how you look at your primary residence. In Switzerland, we often live at the same place for a long time. So a long-term investment makes a lot of sense. So let me get back to the job side of things. As new environmental directives were published by the European Union, a new sustainability officer was hired and a capable team was established. I became a member of the team. I could contribute my long-term corporate experience and also learn about E, S, and G. That stands for environment, society or societal, and governance topics. And I learned about the Paris climate goals. We all want to go beyond maintaining our performance and reputation as a resilient and environmentally friendly company, but also to improve our sustainability performance and the credentials and to be compliant to the new European sustainability directives. Support from shareholders and top management was strong, and we had a good start. We analyzed the status quo and began to integrate sustainable practices into our business processes and strategies. This role was an eye-opener to me about managing complexity and taught me even more about good change management that I had learned as a corporate service director. Changing, you know, a hardware-focused company to benefit from services around their products had been a job of convincing many stakeholders already. But integrating new sustainability measures into day-to-day operations across an entire group of companies, that was a bit more interesting, even. It showed me how several sort of layers of change management and a lot of unknowns need to be successfully communicated, circumvented, and slowly implemented. Teams are important, especially those that have enough diversity. Those were particularly helpful on the way, and also what helped to get this going and keep this going was a strong culture of friendliness and mutual trust. Those things are an important base on this journey. As I said before with my house, climate topics are a generational challenge. For me and others, having kids yourself or even grandchildren makes a difference in how the urgency is perceived. At least for me, this is a big positive driver of change. Then, at retirement, I decided to found my own company. Why not really retire, relax, and enjoy life? No, I really didn't want to stop helping the progress. My view was strongly backed by my family. They saw that we would all be happier if I had another meaningful quest in life. What was I trying to do? My objective was to assist other sustainability teams, integrating in a short time efficiently and in a focused way the best first steps to implement new sustainability practices into daily operations, I believed it and now found out this is a truly rewarding endeavor, and my clients can truly benefit from my corporate experience. It's fun, challenging, and feels very good at the same time. It can be a tough job. There are many voices now, for example, on LinkedIn, supporting the new sustainability officer's tough task of balancing economic success with rewarding steps in climate change. In my view, our generation has a responsibility to support these young leaders. While it may seem counterintuitive, even if everyone in a large company agrees on the need for more sustainable and climate-friendly business practices, aligning these established, very well-running control loops, the very well-known key performance indicators, and also the shareholder expectations with these new goals requires substantial experience and also a never-give-up attitude. The guidance from those who have navigated similar paths before can be invaluable. Recently, I've also been asked to support non-profit projects aimed at improving our world, such as making conditions in the global south better, where extreme heat or heavy rainfall can make life extremely challenging. Another subject that I'm in contact with is about reducing microplastics in the ocean, for example, from waste or from fishing nets. And that likely has a health and a climate impact. Waste in the ocean can reduce its capability to turn carbon dioxide into oxygen or keep carbon dioxide in the water. And microplastics, we don't even know what health impact it has on us, but it's been found in many different animals and also in humans. When I listen to all the news and looking at our economic habits and the world's ecological necessities and how these interact, this has reinforced my belief that we can't just focus on single issues, technologies, or one culture or location. Humanity must explore many interconnected solutions to create meaningful change. The world is a complex adaptive system, and our actions can also have unintended effects. That's why we need to think broadly, act carefully, and with an open mindset. This podcast is an extension of my journey, a platform to explore and discuss the technologies, strategies, and cultural shifts necessary for a sustainable future. We'll tackle everything from the fundamentals of renewable energy to the complexities of global sustainability policies. I can't offer new solutions, but what I can offer is my open attitude to technological and cultural opportunities and my experience of looking at things from different viewpoints with 40 years of experience in a global technology company. My hope is that by sharing insights and stories, we can all learn, grow, and individually contribute to a world where progress and sustainability are not just compatible, but must become mutually reinforcing. My life, a multicultural and varied experience with ups and downs, prepared me well to engage holistically and not as an expert that I once was. Like my ancestors who were resilient and took risks, I've also made my own bold moves. I started from engineering, where I soaked up diverse cultures and places, to working with a great sustainability team at a major company. This shift really showed me the importance of seeing the big picture. Sustainability for me is about blending continuous innovation with a deep appreciation of different lifestyles and the necessities worldwide. I've learned that making a real impact goes beyond having great ideas. It's about understanding the full picture and diving in head first, making one step after another. Join me as we explore new ideas, get inspired, and perhaps even take a few risks together. Let's see how we, just like the generations before us, can make our world a slightly better place. Welcome to Michael's Green World, Competitive Sustainability. Be sure to catch the next episode. I hope you enjoyed our time together today and that you'll come back to learn more about uniting sustainable practices with economic progress. Watch out for the next episode of Michael's Green World. I hope you enjoyed the time with us and come back for more on how to bring together our sustainable and economic progress.